My name is Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm down 100. This is what I say at every meeting. And the reason why I say it at every meeting is because there's people that need to know that it's possible, which is why I go to meetings, so that other people can know it's possible, so that other people can find recovery and work the steps and recover from compulsive overeating. So at every meeting I go to, I say, my name is Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm down 160 pounds from my top weight, and I have 9 years of abstinence. Coming to a convention like this is, as members, I think it's where we get recharged. But one thing my sponsor always told me is that the meetings are not the program. The social events are not the program. The program is when I get a sponsor and I work the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous and I abstain one day at a time from compulsive overeating and carry the message to other compulsive overeaters. And the whole thing is my experiences in recovery and all of my experiences before recovery don't really make sense until I'm sitting down with another compulsive overeater and I get to see how my experience can benefit others. So, you know, I always have this feeling that I'm learning how to better express myself, which I've shared that a lot with you this weekend. But I'll also be very honest that I've always felt a general pushback from the things that I've had to say about Overeaters Anonymous. And it's been very difficult. And at times it's also made me get louder because I don't always feel heard. And the reason why I don't always think I feel heard isn't because what I'm saying isn't the truth, but because what I say brings up fear in other people within their recovery. I had 1 year of abstinence. I was one of the youngest people there, and I was the delegate for my meeting. Went to the intergroup board meeting, and there was a gentleman who was the chairperson, and he was a youngerish guy, but I heard he said he was a 100-pounder, never met him before, but I was like, oh my God, someone that looks like me. And he nominated me for the intergroup board. Was I qualified? No. But the whole point was he was coming from my experience. He had come in young, and he knew that's what I needed. And so I got on the board. And I didn't put on very successful special events. But I went to that board meeting every week or every month, and I participated, and I called my sponsor, and I bitched about the intergroup board meetings. And I got to start practicing the traditions. I got to start practicing how I deal with the intergroup and how I interconnect with other people, how I relate, how I use the traditions and how I use the concepts and how I use the principles of the program to work and live with other people. And you know what? I made a lot of suggestions at every board meeting of things that I would love to see us do, or what about this event, or what about that? And you know what? There were a lot of long-timers that sat there like, well, we tried that. That didn't work. Or, you know what's worked before? We should just do this. Or why don't we just do that? Or let's just do what always has worked. And it was tiresome. And I feel like at times, and just like in my life, as a compulsive overeater, I feel like I've spent a lot of my time apologizing. I apologize for how much space I took up. I apologize for having an opinion. I'd apologize for all the mistakes I had to make. I'd apologize for being the one, you know, not making sure I wasn't a troublemaker in my family because there's so much other stuff going on. So I ate and I ate and I ate. But the thing is, you get rid of the food, but you don't get rid of the way you think, the dis-ease in your thinking. That's why we do the step work, because the food doesn't solve it. The weight loss doesn't solve it. What solves it is when I get real about who I am and who I want to be and take the actions to get there. So then I was on the intergroup board, and one thing I got to see while I was there was a long timer on the board, and she was causing problems. I was new, and I hadn't learned yet how to open up to people appropriately. And I shared a lot of stuff with this person. And she talked about it. But also, intergroup board meetings and business, there's two ways of looking at this. Our primary purpose is to carry the message. That can translate into the intergroup and board meetings, because what we're doing is we're running an organization. Like, it's not frou-frou-y. And it shouldn't be frou-frou-y. Because what we're talking about is the stability of a nonprofit organization that has to function within the governmental system that needs money to function and has to grow. So we can sit here and be the most social organization possible, but if we're not conducting ourselves as a business and asking ourselves, the truth is when we're saying primary purpose, carrying the message to other compulsive overeaters, if our fellowship is getting smaller, then we're not really serving our clientele appropriately. And these are the questions we have to ask ourselves. And so I go to board meetings, I go to World Service, and I say, there's something that we're not doing right. Or there's something that we could do differently. Or maybe what has worked doesn't work anymore because we're different. Because culturally, things have changed. Are these outside issues? No. We have a Unity with Diversity pamphlet now. Are we really looking at that? When we see diversity in our fellowship, are we saying, hey, you know what? We need you to serve. Because you know what? You can bring in some diversity into our organization. You have a voice. You're abstinent. There are other people like you that need to hear what you have to say. As a man, I've come into meetings, and I've also felt women feel uncomfortable around me. Not necessarily because I said anything. When I was newly abstinent and I went to a meeting, it was in the basement of a parking lot in LA. There was like six of us. I was the only man there. And there was another, and this woman said in the middle of the meeting, and I think she was a newcomer too. And this is when I was new. She goes, isn't this a woman's meeting? It was not a woman's meeting. But for as a man and as a new member of Overeaters Anonymous, it made me had to fight the one thing I was always fighting all along, which was that I was okay. And that I was allowed to be there. I didn't think I could be anywhere. And then this might be a woman's meeting? And afterwards, thank God, I talked to a woman who was there. And I was like, you know, she said, that's her stuff. Don't worry about it. And you know what? I needed that too. I needed that straightforward, like, my disease is so loud, guys. My disease is so loud. Don't pat me on the back and tell me it'll be okay. Tell me to fight. Tell me to fight for my recovery. Between all the different programs I'm in, I still go to 5 meetings a week. And I sponsor in 2 of my programs. And I do service above the group level. I do it because I want to, but I do it because the truth is like, I care about my fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, and if you're not here, where am I going to go? And on the flip side, what I'm aware of too is that I was going to a meeting, I was supposed to be the speaker for it, and the person with the keys didn't show up. And everybody's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Where are we going to have the meeting? What are we going to? I was like, we sit our asses in the parking lot and we have the meeting. Because Overeaters Anonymous exists whether .org is behind it or not. Whether we sit here and we have raffles, that's not the OA program. These are the things we do so that we can sustain ourselves as an organization. So I was doing service like that, and then I had to step down from the board. I moved to San Fernando Valley, and I joined the board again. And, you know, find your place in service. Find where you fit. And like, this is what works for me. I love the traditions. I love talking. I love making people angry. And so I went to World Service Business Conference. And the first year I was there, I was so overwhelmed. And I saw, like, the board of trustees that are up on a little podium, and I thought they were something special, and they are, because what they're doing is they're guardians of the fellowship. They're guardians of the traditions and the concepts to the best of their ability to make sure that the organization is moving forward. And most importantly, the thing that I want to forget, and the board had talked to me too, like, Matt, you have a real us-them mentality, but like we're all on the same team. And they're right, because the truth is it's an inverted pyramid. I mean, guys, we're in charge. We are really in charge. And I was finding myself always going up to a board of trustees member and be like, you guys need to be doing this, and you guys should be doing that. And you know what? You know what? I'm going to go put a motion in. That's what I'll do. Took me 5 years to finally get that. You know what? I'm going to stop bitching. I'll just put a motion in and take it to the floor next year and let the conference vote on it. And then the board of trustees will have to do it. But like, that's it. That's it. They're not stupid. They're just not going to do something unless they have to do it necessarily, you know? But that's how it's supposed to be, because we are the ones that are empowered to make this fellowship move forward. We're compulsive overeaters. Innately, I think we like to sit on our laurels. Innately, there's a lot of things I don't want to do. Even in my career and the things that I want to accomplish for myself, I really would love it just to happen. But it's taking me years to really understand what it looks like to take real action that gets me results in my life. It's about clarity of purpose. It's about knowing who I am. And my friend, he does like workshops and, you know, around male empowerment and things like that. And growing up, the one thing I thought was the one thing I shouldn't be would be to have that. I used to beat myself up for if I spoke up. I used to think like, yeah, don't be that, don't have any audacity, because that's inappropriate. And through the work of Overeaters Anonymous and being of service and getting, the more service I do and the more I show up, it's not just that I show up and have experiences, but you can't learn this. You have to experience it. And what I'm not just having the experience, but I'm actually getting to experience myself coming into myself. And what I've realized is that if I were to say I had any gift, it's not that I'm the most talented, but it's that I have some audacity. And I used to really be scared of that. And the most successful people I read in this book that I read, like, the most successful people aren't the ones who are the most talented. They're not the greatest artists. They're not the greatest this or that. They're the people who are willing to just do it. And I think when I went to World Service in the first year, I got up to the mic one time, and it was over a pro or con about social media. And the way the policy was written, it was going to make everyone, the way it was written, it would have made every single person within the fellowship, if they were on Facebook, it was worded in such a way that it would have made it as if the fellowship was not following a tradition just because they were on Facebook. But they didn't understand that. And so I got up there and I explained it to him. In those 3 minutes, like, I'm going to try to explain this to people who don't know social media, but we'll see. And that was because there was something I could offer to the group, and I got to have that experience. There was also like this after meeting thing one night. And it was the question they were bringing up was, the question posed was, is Overeaters Anonymous working? Or like, what are we doing wrong? Or it was something along those lines. Like, and it's funny because what I bring to the group are my suggestions of how to change the organization or what things we can do better. But like, that question really pissed me off. Because that's our problem, guys. We're not doing anything wrong. We don't need to change the message for the newcomer who we want them to get it. They get it or they go. They want recovery or they don't. And we have dumbed down our message, and we've simplified this program, and we are killing people with it. That is what I believe. And I say that because if I don't take my program seriously, I'm done. And it's not that any one person is doing it. But it's that we as an organization have to take ourselves seriously. As a 12-step group, we have to ask ourselves, how are we carrying the message? What you said was brilliant. Like, what she said up here was perfect. And everyone can be doing that. Every inner group, every meeting can be taking themselves seriously. When someone's breaking a tradition, you don't sit there and berate them in the meeting. You pull them aside afterwards and you educate them. Help them feel a part of the fellowship. Help them see the beauty in honoring the traditions and looking at us as a fellowship. We are a fellowship. That means you go get coffee after a meeting and you carry the message to them. You don't go to your meeting and you go home. You connect with each other. And you be a fellowship. And if you don't have meetings near you, then yes, we try to maybe start a meeting. Or you know what? Get on the phone meetings. Just do what you can do. Or you help out with service, help out with the website, or you just do your part. Write an article for Lifeline, all that stuff. My sponsor said, if you want self-esteem, you do esteemable acts. You can write that down. If you want self-esteem, do esteemable acts. And that's the thing, guys. Like, I'm just plagiarizing everyone who's helped me in the program. Like, this is just all stuff that I've been told. I'm not teaching. I'm not saying anything that's not new. I'm just saying what's been shared with me. And also, the whole idea is we're just here to share our experience, strength, and hope. We're not here to tell each other what to do. Because the whole point is we're just here to help facilitate each person having their own experience. My favorite idea of God in the big book, and in general, if I were to define my higher power in any way, it would be the great reality deep down within us. The great reality deep down within us. Because my go-to is to go to everything outside of myself for my solutions. What I can do is at that workshop, that's the one thing I raised my hand. I was like, we're not doing anything wrong. That's what's wrong, is we think we're doing something wrong. And also the fact that maybe the fellowship numbers have gone down, that's okay too. Because maybe we're in a process of needing to reorganize some things. Really look at some things. And you know what? OA has a hard job ahead of themselves. Outside organizations that deal with eating disorders, they have a hard time with Overeaters Anonymous. They really do. And I say that because I work with these other organizations trying to carry a message and advocate for men with eating disorders. And our message isn't totally clear. But we all do our part in our own ways. But inventory is really important. Really knowing what works and what doesn't. So I joined on to the young, so that year, my first year of OA, I was on the, it was called the Youth in OA Committee. Sounds like a church group, you know? I was like, Youth in OA? Youth in OA? What youth are we talking about? And this has been my fight for the past 5 years. And it's because of the, and I, I said this at World Service last year. It was the first time I've ever like got a reaction where I was like, whoa, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But I talked about how feminine the program was and how motherly the program was. And all the women in the room went, huh? I was like, oh man, I just opened up a can of worms with that one. We can't help kids. It is not our job to help kids. I'm tired of receiving emails and talking to people about their wanting to help their grandkids. It's inappropriate and it's wrong. Because the 12 steps are a personal decision that a person works. And as an organization, as a business that's trying to help as many people as possible, we have to ask ourselves, where can we make the most difference? If you want to help your grandkid, practice your own program. And I say this because I received, like when I was the young person's, we changed the name of the committee. It was the first thing on our agenda, was changing the name of the committee. Because it's young persons. And we decided on a name, and we tried to find something that really fit that would slowly shift the consciousness to focus on like 30 and under. In our program, 30 and under would be young people. I'm serious. And so that's the demographic that we started to encourage the fellowship to work with. She was on the committee the first year we were there. She was there. And we slowly started making those changes. And then we put out a letter that went through some of the traditions and some suggestions about how to help the fellowship. One, rotation of service. I believe we don't have rotation of service because people are scared. Reasonably so, because when you're doing service, you're a lot safer. And so people don't want to step down. I had to get prodded to step down as the young person's chair. But I got it, you know? But what we can do is we can groom new people into these positions. Or maybe they're not totally qualified, but we can still let them have the position and work with them. Help them. Let them falter. Let them make mistakes. Start a meeting on a college campus. Focus on the demographic we can have the most effect with. And here's the thing. Another thing that we keep talking about is like, well, how do I work with the young people? Or but I'm old. Like, how? The whole point is like, okay, we have this focus of doing work for young people, but how? So then the question is, well, how do we help young people? The answer is we don't dumb down the message. The answer is we focus on sharing our experience. It's not how do we get to the young people. The whole point is the message has to have depth and weight. The reason why AA has the fellowship it has is because it's confident in its message and it does not waver and it's not going to deal with bullshit. That is attractive to me because that says there's something there that I want. If they're not going to waver, I work at a restaurant, and when people come into that restaurant and they want to modify their food and they want to do this, and I go to the kitchen and the chef and the manager says, no. This food was prepared a certain way because that's how it's supposed to be prepared. They can buy it that way or they can go to another restaurant. And you know what? People want to buy the food a lot more. And then we'll raise the prices a couple months later. Is that just psychology? No. Yeah. I mean, yes, there's the psychological aspect of it. But the whole point is like our disease is so strong, but our desire for recovery is there. My recovery wants to be like my disease is there, but like the only way I really push past the disease is when I'm challenged. Challenge me. Challenge my recovery. Challenge me to say you can get abstinent through this. You do not need to compulsively overeat through this. A long timer said to me, because there's so much relapse in this room, and we do so much work around relapse, it's sad. Because the focus on relapse and focus on trying to get people out of relapse, it reinforces almost that relapse has to be a part of the recovery, and it doesn't have to be. People relapse because they're making decisions. And I talk to people in relapse. I find out what's going on. My sponsee just relapsed. And you know what? It was a long time coming. He was making decisions. And I said to him, I was like, you've been working towards this, haven't you? Like, and he said, yeah. Is he growing through this? Is he recovering? Yes. But a long timer said to me, he said, Matt, relapse does not have to be a part of your story. And you know what? That gave me freedom. That released me of that idea that relapse is necessary in order for me to recover in Overeaters Anonymous. We need to help the still suffering compulsive overeater. And we need to help the member in relapse. But one thing that has been my experience is that I have 9 years now. And what do I do with this? Where do I go? We don't have any books on being abstinent. Like really, really, we have the book on the abstinence book. But like we don't have... This program has been around how many years now, Karen? And we have no book on body image, sexuality, or relationships. And that was the last thing as the Young Persons Committee that we did was submit to have a book made about those issues. Because like we're so busy wanting to help people who may not want to be helped, that what about those of us who are still here? And strengthening them, getting them to step out of their comfort zone. I believe one reason I'm still here is because like I'm challenged. And I had sponsors who always challenged me. And I found people that had 25 years. I was blessed to live in an area that had people with long-term abstinence. And I sought them out and I asked them questions, because someone with 5 years does not have the experience of someone with 25 years. And it's not, one thing my sponsor always told me, he goes, it's not about years in program, it's about experience. And so even though I had a sponsor who had been here a long time, he was always reinforcing to me that, Matt, you have experience, you have experience, you have experience. Because I stayed abstinent through things. And I can carry that message. And I was going to board meetings with everyone who had longer time than me, and I was told to be quiet. You know, I had 1 year. But I also was the youngest person there, and I had ideas, and I was going to share them with people. And there's also a level of finding humility and being quiet when I need to be quiet. And periods when I would share at one meeting, then not share at two, then share at one meeting, and then not share at two. I wanted that book on body image, sexuality, and relationships to get made because I needed it. Tonight or today, I was going to talk about my emotional recovery and my hope. And they go hand in hand for me. And what I found for myself is that my fight with the fellowship, or my struggle with the fellowship, or the work I do in service, is directly related to my growth personally. And where I'm at in my life is wanting to become a more confident individual, wanting to trust in my God-given gifts. And to trust in the message that I want to share and the things that I want to do. And like the thing is, guys, we have it. We got everything we need for this fellowship to be what it needs to be. And I've said it, I've already said it, and I'll say it again. We do not need to dumb down the message. And when you're dealing with young people, you just carry the message as it was carried to you. After like 4 or 5 years of working on the social media policies and slowly getting the fellowship to open up to that. We complicate things. And I know not everyone here does social media, but the whole point is it's called social media, but the shift in perspective has to be that it is a form of public information. And when you take it that way and look at it as a form of public information, then utilize it that way. Read the statement on the social media policy. You as an individual are responsible for your anonymity. Overeaters Anonymous as the organization is not anonymous. Even if you like something on Facebook, if you like the American Cancer Association, that does not mean you have cancer. It means you have liked the organization, you have liked the work that they have done. If you like the organization of Overeaters Anonymous, it means you like the work they have done. So that is an educational component to all of this that we have to start providing to our fellowship. But the whole point is the people who are in leadership positions are all people who don't understand the changes that are occurring culturally for us, then the organization is not going to grow. More than any other organization, a 12-step group's growth and ability to affect change directly has to do with its ability to find humility and to bring in other people to help and to be of service. Sadly, we suggested like young persons is 30 and under. I am not considered a young person anymore. And that sucks, but what do you want for your fellowship? What do you want in your recovery personally? What are you missing in your program? What do you want? Tell me, somebody, what do you want? What does that mean? Okay. What else do you guys want? How are you going to inspire recovery? Say that again? All right. And what would that look like for you? Right. So here's the thing. We're talking about very simple actions that we can take. However, we're also here to empower other people. And what I've found in my experience is you'd be like, we go back and we got these suggestions. And even at World Service, we have all these workshops. And then we go up there and we read the list of ideas. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we're going to do this. And then we're going to make this list. And then we're going to do that. And then we're going to... And nothing happens. Because when you go back to your group, you go back to your meeting, the whole point is like, and it's not always there. It's not always there. And that's why some people as leaders have the ability to do this, and it's harder for other people. But you go back to your meeting, be like, you know what? We have this list, and we're going to make these copies of this pamphlet, and we're going to go give them out because we want to help someone who's still suffering. For me, it's about my energy that I put behind the things I'm doing. It's the sense of urgency that we need recovery. It's a sense of urgency that our organization needs newcomers because we need to sponsor people. And for me, sometimes my inability to have that gusto, it comes from my shame. It comes from that place of I need to be fat and hidden and I don't want you to see me. I live in LA, and the truth is some people say in meetings, like, I'm not part of the sexy program, like AA is the cool program. It's like, I live in LA. You know what? Everybody wants what Overeaters Anonymous has. How to eat a certain way and then not gain weight, like, and to be at a healthy body weight. That's the sexiest thing in LA there is. Everybody wants that. What else do you want for your fellowship? What do you want for your recovery? Guilt-free eating. So where does the guilt come from? Okay, and could it be possible that maybe some of that's still present in the fellowship? Right. Because abstinence has nothing to do with good or bad. My issue with that checklist about strong abstinence is because I don't agree with the word strong. That's it. I do not agree with the word strong. And I think it's a hindrance to You can't have strong abstinence because if you have strong abstinence, it incites that there's such thing as weak abstinence. That might be a motion I'll take to the floor to have that checklist pulled. It doesn't mean that there's not... We can have strong recovery and weak recovery, but we're abstinent or we're not. And those are the things we get to ask ourselves, like, why am I feeling guilty? It's like, well, how am I talking about these things? How am I considering this stuff? And it's like getting back, what is the definition of abstinence? It does not, the word good is not listed in there. So it's about asking those questions that we don't want to ask. Where is this coming from? Okay, so you know what you do? I'd like to have a business meeting in 2 weeks to make it okay for us to talk about talk about food. And one thing my sponsor said to me, he goes, Matt, 1 minute on the problem, 2 minutes on the solution. The first meeting, he heard me where I just complained for 3 minutes. He goes, Matt, do not ever go in there and get in vomit for 3 minutes and inspect everyone else to clean it up. But he was holding me accountable for my recovery. Or like, focus on the solution. Because even me, I'm learning new ways of saying things. Because I always want to tell people what not to do. You know, where it's like, I'm learning part of empowering people is to say, hey, you can do this. And back it up with experience. When my sponsor told me 1 minute on the problem, 2 minutes on the solution, it's changed how I look at things. I'm much more solution-oriented because I practiced 1 minute on the problem, 2 minutes on the solution, and a three-minute share, and doing that every meeting, it started to shift in my consciousness, and I do that in my life. Don't get me wrong. I will bitch for a minute, but then I will be like, okay, let's find the answer. Let's find the solution to this. What's my time like? Right. Yeah. And you know what? Not everyone's going to get it. And just because they leave. I've had to experience it myself. Just because people don't get it, it doesn't mean that I'm doing something wrong. It just means they're not ready. And again, it goes right back to how I am as a compulsive overeater, that I'm wrong, that I'm a mistake, that I'm not doing it right. And when you get a bunch of people who are recovering from those types of mindsets, you will see the collective consciousness fighting through that. And I see that for myself in the fellowship. I see that fight, that feeling, that fear that I have to explain myself, or we have to explain recovery to people, or explain why. When new people want me to sponsor them, or I start sponsoring them, they want to work their program. I'm like, well, here's the thing. I'm going to just share with you my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But also, don't tell me how you want me to sponsor you either. Because that doesn't work. Because you're here because you're killing yourself with food. So the whole, like, it just doesn't even make... I would be crazy if I was going to sit there and be like, yeah, you're right. Let's just... You should be running this show. What else do you want? Yeah, back there. All right. I really like that one. Fun and passion. All right. Talk about that. And where would you find that? Would it be at fellowship with these people? Like, how would you want to? For me, I'm learning how to say what I need. What do you need? What would you want from them? Ask them for what you need. How would you ask for that? And you get to take that back to your group or to your meeting or to your inner group and be like, I want and need fun. I need to feel the passion of OA. What can we do so that we can feel that? I want a fun event. And if they say, well, we can't do that, then you say, you know what? We're going to take a group conscience. It's very easy for things to get skirted under the rug because the truth is some members are stronger than others and some people are louder than others. And the important thing about the traditions and the concepts is for everyone to realize that we all have a voice. And if you don't feel empowered yet in your program or on a board or within, if you don't feel empowered to necessarily speak up, if you become familiar with the traditions, like the only reason why I speak up the way I do is mainly because I've really worked hard to educate myself about the traditions. And I talk to people about the traditions. So when I get pissed off about something, it's usually because I feel like your tradition isn't being honored in some way, or a policy isn't being followed in a way that I think is working for the fellowship. Because the truth is like it's about, this is where I practice this stuff, and then I can go out into my life and really hopefully make a difference. What else do you want? And even then, the idea of people knowing about Overeaters Anonymous, it's all connected. It's the having the passion and the fun that incites a sense of like ownership over your fellowship, which allows you to go out there and want to carry the message. Rhonda.
I want for the newcomer every day.
She wants the message of Overeaters Anonymous to be as clear as any other fellowship, that when they're abstinent, they know what it is, and they can leave the rooms knowing what it is they're doing. And the whole idea is like, so how do I build self-esteem by doing esteemable acts? It can build on itself. Like one thing my sponsor said to me, and this is because, you know what, he's proud of his 25 years. Like I'm proud that I have 9 years of abstinence. Like, yes, I'm grateful for that. And I never thought, I mean, 9 years of abstinence, what? But you can be in the rooms for 30 years and be abstinent for 1 year or 2 years or 5 years. But what my sponsor said to me, he goes, the program is working the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous and being abstinent. One thing that I find to be a conundrum is the whole idea of like the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively, right? But what does that mean? How do you determine someone's desire? I mean, if we're a membership and you're like, what if you could kick out people? How would you determine member? What would guarantee you a membership card? What is desire? Desire is very bleh. But that's where like we have an opportunity to tell people, if your only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively, how do I practice and exhibit showing a desire? It means I take action and encourage the fellowship to take action. If you have a desire to stop eating compulsively, what that means to us is that we do stuff. We do a program. We work a program. Yeah. And be willing to let people figure it out. One thing I asked a long time, because I had a sponsee that kept relapsing. And he goes, Matt, ask him how you're helping him. I was like, what do you mean? I mean, I've never had a question that I thought would, it works. You ask someone, so Paul, how am I, you're struggling, but you want me to be your sponsor. How am I helping you? They will leave or they'll get their shit together. But that's the thing though. It's like we have these ideas, but the whole point is like we have to break it down into an action. Okay, we want to be part of the solution, but what does that look like? That's my point though, is like, what are the actions? Like be recovered, but what does that look like? Call the newcomer. Well, and that's the thing where it comes down to the definition of abstinence is while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight.
Oh yeah, I can read that too.
So you know what? Right. So and you know what? I see what you're saying. So then here's what that looks like for me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what I'm, okay.
All right, here's my experience, strength, and hope. My sponsor said you're going to do a red light, a yellow light, a green light food list. The red light foods are the foods you know you eat compulsively when you eat alcoholically. The yellow light foods are the iffy foods. And the green light foods are most likely the green foods, like lettuce, broccoli, things like that, that you're not going to eat compulsively. And then one day at a time, and then I also noticed what the common ingredients were in all of those red light foods. And one day at a time, I abstained from eating flour and sugar, and I eat three meals a day and nothing in between. That is practicality. And then I don't think about it. Now, is it perfect? No. But I have a plan of eating. I have a way that I'm living, and it works. When I was new, I even avoided sugar in the first five ingredients. I did all that. I was practically on gray sheet. I don't do that now. It's different, but that's how I came into my abstinence, and I committed my food every day to my sponsor before I ate it. And if I needed to make a food change, I called that in too. Mm-hmm. And also too, it's like learning how to live life abstinently. Like, I got a sponsor. It's like, I am younger, and like, I'm in a different place in my life, and I wanted to share a meal, like have a romantic dinner with my girlfriend and like share a meal with her. And I got to call my sponsor and talk about that and find out what that would look like. And you know what? I got to have that experience because I'm deserving of that experience. So yes, we have that we need to find an absence that works for us, and not everyone that needs that kind of an experience. Well, I think part of the dumbing down the message, what I'm saying is like, what we're doing is working for us. If I'm absent, I have 9 years of absence. You know what? I can be confident that recovery is working for me. And that's scary. It's really scary to say that I'm confident that recovery is working. Yeah. Well, because the point is like, I want to be confident. I want to be I love Overeaters Anonymous. I love this fellowship so much. And I value, my sponsor took me to an AA meeting, a field trip. He was like, we're going on a field trip. And afterwards, they took me to coffee. And it was this specific meeting. There's a real focus on meditation. But they sat there and they said to me, we're going to let you ask any questions you need to ask about the 12 steps. And we're going to give you the one thing that we can never get back. So we want you to respect it. And they're like, do you know what that is? I was like, no, no. And they said, it's our time. There's nothing that reinforced to me that something about Overeaters Anonymous worked, like the fact that people were willing to give me their time. They were willing to give me their most valuable possession that they could never get back, and that was their time. And that told me that something is here. The reason why I fight so much for Overeaters Anonymous and the reason why I bring up these issues isn't because it hasn't worked. It's because it has worked for me. And I want it to work for so many more people. I love intergroup renewal, that idea. I believe it's important to stop and ask ourselves, like, how are we implementing these things? What are we doing? How are we doing it? But realizing, like, what does the book say? We don't simply carry the message. We are the message. We really underestimate that. I do believe in being at a healthy body weight. I think it's important. And I say that because I know that the decisions I make for myself when I'm 340 pounds are different than decisions I make for myself at a healthy body weight. And I'm also aware that the reason why I say that I believe it's important to be at a healthy body weight, it's because when I was 340 pounds, I thought that that was how I had to be. It really still has nothing to do with the weight. It has to do with a sense of ownership that I'm allowed to have a good life, a healthy life, and sit in a seat and function and run around and feel healthy and be productive. And if I'm being chased, that I could run away. You know, the AA 12 and 12 talks about how our instincts have gone awry. And if I am living in a way that's out of line with what my God-given instincts would want me to do or be, then I get to ask those questions. Well, and also, aren't you going to want a shorter meeting if you're not hearing people pitching the solution? You know what? People aren't really talking about the solution. Like, why don't we just make that meeting an hour long? Maybe people will get to the point. So the real question is, who was on your 10th step? Was it me? No. So... All right, so it's actually, the buzzer just went off. I'm going to just end with, you know, this was an experience of a lifetime. I had to get a passport to come up here, you know? So. I'm glad I got the passport when I did. We got our elections coming up. But it's because of Overeaters Anonymous that these amazing opportunities happen for me. And the things that I learned from you all and the things you all have been through that I hear about in the meetings and in the workshops, you know, it doesn't matter where Overeaters Anonymous is. Like, this program is carrying people through some heavy, heavy stuff. And the truth is, you all are my heroes. It sounds so hokey, but like, these people in the rooms are my heroes. Because you guys go through stuff with dignity and grace in a way that not everyone can. And thank you so much for allowing me to come here and to experience you all. So thank you.